From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Another day of announcements of changes in practice and law as a consequence of the pandemic coronavirus. President Trump held his daily press conference late Thursday, and we bring you the relevant portions thereof as time permits.
I want to thank you very much for being here, and I'd like to update you on the steps we're taking on our ongoing fight to defeat the virus. This morning at 7:55, I spoke to the leaders of the G20, had a great meeting, and we have a lot of different ideas, a lot of good ideas. We're working together. The leaders gathered virtually around the world to discuss the whole subject of the problem that right now 151 nations have got. We had President Alberto Fernandez of Argentina, Prime Minister Scott Morrison of Australia, President Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada, President Xi of China, President Emmanuel Macron of France, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany, Prime Minister Modi of India, President Widodo of Indonesia, Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte of Italy, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan. Congratulations to Japan on making a great decision on the Olympics. We're going to make it next year, 2021. President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador of Mexico. I want to thank the President of Mexico for having done such a great job with respect to the military. We have 27,000 Mexican soldiers on our southern border, and very few people are getting through, I can tell you that. We got to keep it that way. And we have a great relationship with Mexico now. President Putin of Russia, King Salman of Saudi Arabia, President Ramaphosa of South Africa, President Moon of, as you know, a country that we spend a lot of time in, South Korea. We're working very hard on that. Prime Minister Sanchez of Spain, President Erdogan of Turkey, Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the United Kingdom, President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Council, Charles Michel, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, World Health Organization Director Tedros Adhanom, World Bank President David Malpass, and the International Monetary Fund Managing Director, Kristalina Georgieva. So that's a big group, but it's a great group. It's and they were all there, every one of them, and we talked about the problem, and hopefully it won't be a problem for too much longer. The United States is working with our friends and partners around the world to stop the spread of the virus and coordinate our efforts. We discussed how vitally important it is for all of our nations to immediately share information and data. And we've been doing that to a large extent, but we'll do it even more so. And to inform our, I guess you could say, form each of us on the fight that we've got going one way or the other. It's a little bit different, but we're handling it a little bit in different ways. But there is a great uniformity, I think. We had a, it was a terrific meeting. Tremendous spirit among all of those countries. You had 20 countries plus the other people that I mentioned, and a tremendous spirit to get this over with. After the meeting with the world leaders, I spoke with the governors of our 50 states and territories. Our team has been in constant communication with the governors, and we had a terrific meeting. Somebody in the fake news said that one of the governors said, "Oh, we need Tom Brady." I said, "Yeah." He meant that in a positive way. He said, "We need Tom Brady. We're going to do great." And he meant it very positively, but they took it differently. They think Tom Brady should be leading the effort. That's only fake news, and I like Tom Brady. Spoke to him the other day. He's a great guy. But I wish the news could be real. I wish it could be honest. I wish it weren't corrupt. But so much of it is. It's so sad to see. Just so sad to see. We had a great meeting. I tell you what, I'm sure you have tapes of the meeting. I'm sure that you were able to get tapes very easily. So you had 50 governors plus. And if you had tapes, you'd see it was really, I mean, there's no contention. I would say virtually none. I would say maybe one person, there was a little tiny bit of a raising of a voice, a little wise guy, a little bit. But he's usually a big wise guy, not so much anymore. We saw to it that he wouldn't be so much anymore. But he is, I would rate Mike was there. A lot of the folks in the back were there. And it was a great meeting. It took place at about 12 o'clock. So we went from the G20 to the governors. We also spoke about the economic relief with the governors and the package that we're moving through Congress to deliver much needed financial assistance to hardworking families and small businesses. I want to thank Democrats and Republicans in the Senate for unanimously passing the largest financial relief package in American history. 96-0, and I have to say it's the largest by far. And I'm profoundly grateful that both parties came together to provide relief for American workers and families in this hour of need. The House of Representatives must now pass this bill, hopefully without delay. I think it's got tremendous support when you're at 96-0. And as you know, a couple of those people are quarantined, and one, Rand Paul, is he's actually got it, but he'll be better. He's been a great guy. He's been a great friend of mine, actually. The massive $2.2 trillion relief package includes job retention loans for small businesses with loan forgiveness available for businesses that keep their workers on the payroll. It's pretty good. Loan forgiveness, keep the workers on the payroll. It's pretty good. Direct cash payments will be available to American citizens earning less than $99,000 per year, $3,400 for the typical family of four. Expanded unemployment benefits. The average worker who has lost his or her job will receive 100% of their salary for up to four full months. These are things that, by the way, we have plenty more to go, but they're things that nobody's ever had any package like this done. And I just want to thank them. Hopefully it'll get approved equally easily in the House, really. I think it will go through pretty well from what I hear. Virtually everybody. There could be one vote, one grandstander maybe. You might have one grandstander. And for that, we'll have to come back and take a little more time, and it'll pass. It'll just take a little longer. But let's see whether or not we have a grandstander. Critical support for the hardest hit industries with a ban on corporate stock buybacks and tough new safeguards to prevent executive compensation abuse. Over $100 billion for our amazing doctors, nurses, and hospitals. $45 billion for the disaster relief fund, more than doubling the amount available. This is tremendous stuff. $27 billion for the coronavirus response, including $16 billion to build up the strategic national stockpile with critical supplies, including masks, respirators, and all sorts of pharmaceuticals. $3.5 billion to expand assistance to child care providers and child care benefits to health care workers, first responders, and others on the front lines of the crisis. And these are really brave, incredible people, I have to say. And some of them are getting sick, and some of them are getting very sick, and some of them don't even recover. They're incredible people. $1 billion for Defense Production Act procurement. We are, as you know, using the act, but we use it only when necessary. We use it as leverage. We generally don't have to use it to accomplish what we want to accomplish. As of today, FEMA has shipped over 9 million N95 masks. 20 million face masks, 3.1 million face shields, nearly 6,000 ventilators, 2.6 million gowns, 14.6 million gloves, And we're sending more every day, and we've got tremendous amounts of equipment coming in. A lot of great companies are making equipment right now. The ventilators, obviously, they take a little longer to make, but we have a lot of companies making them, and we're going to be in great shape. We took over an empty shelf. We took over a very depleted place in a lot of ways. As you know, the testing is going very, very well, and that was obsolete and broken, and we fixed it, and it's been going really good. And I think, very importantly, the stockpile, we're really filling it up, and we fill it up rapidly, but we get it out. Sometimes we have it sent directly to the states instead. And again, the state has to be doing this kind of a thing also. We're sort of a we look from behind a little bit, and we look at how are they doing, and if they need help, we do it. But it's their first responsibility. Sometimes they just can't get it. But we load it up, and we send it out. But if we can, we have it sent directly to the state. We want it to go directly to the point where we want it. I can now announce something that I think is incredible, what they've done in the Navy, because the incredible naval hospital ship, the USNS Comfort, which is incredible, actually, when you see it inside, will be underway to New York City on Saturday. So it's going to be leaving on Saturday rather than 3 weeks from now. They did the maintenance quickly, and it was going to be there for quite a while longer, another 3 or 4 weeks, and it should be arriving. I told the governor 20 minutes ago, Governor Cuomo, that the ship will be arriving at New York Harbor on Monday. I think I'm going to go out and I'll kiss it goodbye. I'll go to, it's in Virginia, as you know, and I will go and we'll be waving together, because I suspect the media will be following. John, are you going to be following? Maybe. You never know, huh?
Comfort, sir, it's a very important vessel.
Great ship. It's a great vessel, is right. So if you want to go, I'll see you there. And if you don't, that's okay. After being fully loaded with medical supplies, it's loaded up to the top. And it's over at the Norfolk Naval Base. That's where it departs. It is expected then to, we're saving about 3 to 4 weeks by the incredible work done by the Navy. And I actually look forward to Saturday to see it go. The ship will arrive, and I believe it's going to get a little bit of a ceremony. There's something very beautiful about it. It's an incredible piece of work. Going to be landing at Pier 90 in Manhattan to provide hospital surge capacity for the New York metropolitan area. So it's a surge capacity. They may use it for this, or they may have other people coming in from hospitals unrelated to the virus, and then they'll use those hospitals on land. They'll use those hospitals for the virus, but we'll see how they do it. They could do it either way, one way or the other, whichever one is best. But it could be, because it's set up so well for a regular hospital, that they may take people out of hospitals and then use those rooms for the virus. The National Institute of Health and the private sector, working closely with the FDA, continue to collaborate to discover and test treatments and therapies that can effectively reduce the duration and symptoms of the virus and help people to recover. And I'm firmly committed to bringing these treatments to market very quickly. We have a lot of tests going on with regard to different medicines. And I hope we get lucky. I hope we hit. A lot of talented scientists and doctors are working on therapeutics, a cure, vaccines. I think we're doing very well. Tony may speak to that a little bit later, but I think we're doing very well with regard to the vaccines. I think we're doing well with regard to a lot of the things I just mentioned, but we'll have to see what happens. We're going to know fairly soon about a lot of them. But it's very advanced, and the vaccines are very advanced prior to, as you know, a fairly reasonably long test period of, in that case, over a year. Every American should be proud of the incredible spirit our country has brought to this effort. It's been incredible. Citizens from all walks of life have come together to turn the tide in this battle. We're witnessing the extraordinary power of American unity like a lot of people have never seen. Even getting a vote, you're talking about trillions of dollars, and you get a vote of 96 to nothing. We are waging war on this virus using every financial, scientific, medical, pharmaceutical, and military resource to halt its spread and protect our citizens. I want to express our tremendous thanks to the American people for continuing to practice social distancing like you people are practicing right here. It's, I don't know, this room may never be the same. Maintaining good hygiene and follow government guidelines. Vice President Pence lifts up that card every time. And it's not very complicated, but hopefully you can do that. And your commitment will make all the difference in the world. And that's one of the big ones will be for a while. Stay home. Just relax. Stay home. Making a lot of progress. As we continue to gather more information and accelerate the testing, where we're doing record numbers of tests now, far more than any other country has done. I told you yesterday, 8 days here, because you heard so much about South Korea. The media kept talking about South Korea, South Korea. We have a great relationship with President Moon in South Korea. But when I hear so much about South Korea, so in 8 days, we do more testing than they did in 8 weeks. And it's a very highly sophisticated test. We'll be able to deploy even more data-driven and targeted approaches to slow the ultimately, you know, it's a very devastating thing, but we will vanquish this virus, and it's a lot of progress has been made. That's why earlier today I sent a letter to America's governors describing how we will be using the data to update existing guidance on social distancing, which will be developed in close coordination with our nation's public health officials and scientists. Because of the sacrifices of our great doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals, the brilliance of our scientists and researchers, and the goodness and generosity of our people, I know that we will achieve victory and quickly return to the path of exceptional health, safety, and prosperity for all of our citizens. We have to get back to work. Our people want to work. They want to go back. They have to go back. And we're going to be talking about dates. We're going to be talking with a lot of great professionals. But this is a country that was built on getting it done. And our people want to go back to work. I'm hearing it loud and clear from everybody. So we'll see what happens. We're going to have a lot more information early next week, and we'll be reporting that back. But I just want to leave it with you. We have to go back. This is the United States of America. They don't want to sit around and wait, and they'll be practicing. And by the way, a lot of people misinterpret when I say go back. They're going to be practicing as much as you can, social distancing and washing your hands and not shaking hands and all of the things that we talk about so much, but they have to go back to work. Our country has to go back. Our country is based on that. And I think it's going to happen pretty quickly. A lot of progress is made, but we got to go back to work. We may take sections of our country. We may take large sections of our country that aren't so seriously affected, and we may do it that way, but we've got to start the process pretty soon. So we'll be talking to you a little bit more about that next week. And with that, if you have any questions, you could ask. And then I'm going to have Vice President stay behind. And he's going to take questions and also introduce some of the people. You could ask them some questions. John, please.
Mr. President, unemployment numbers out today, 3.3 million.
Yes.
I take it not a surprise.
No, not
at all. But still a staggering number. Oh, sure. I'm wondering about your perspective on that.
Well, it's nobody's fault, certainly not in this country. Nobody's fault. We got very lucky when we made a decision not to allow people in from China at a very early date. I say that because some people don't want to accept it. But this was a great decision made by our country. The numbers that you're talking about, we're a big country, that'd be far greater, far, far bigger. So when I heard the number, I mean, I heard it could be 6 million, could be 7 million. It's 3.3 or 3.2. But it's a lot of jobs. But I think we'll come back very strong. The sooner we get back to work, you know, every day that we stay out, it gets harder to bring it back very quickly. And our people don't want to stay out. So I know those numbers, John, but I think you'll see a very fast turnaround once we have a victory over the hidden enemy, as I say. It's a hidden enemy. Sometimes a hidden enemy is a lot tougher than somebody that stares you in the face, right? So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, they're fully expected numbers, at least. I mean, at least. Steve, please.
Proposal to deploy some troops along the Canadian border.
Yeah.
And Prime Minister Trudeau is complaining about that. Why is that necessary?
Well, we have very strong deployments on the southern border, as you know, with Mexico. And we had some troops up in Canada, but I'll find out about that. I guess it's equal justice to a certain extent. But in Canada, we do have troops along the border. You know, we have a lot of things coming in from Canada. We have trade, some illegal trade that we don't like. We have very strong sanctions on some. We have very strong tariffs on dumping steel. And we don't like steel coming through our border that's been dumped in Canada so they can avoid the tariff. You know, I charge a lot of tariff for the steel. And it's been great for our steel companies because now they can really go. You look at what's happened with steel. It's been pretty incredible. But we've taken in billions and billions of dollars in tariffs on steel. And much of it comes in from China, but they can come through the Canadian border, too. So we're always watching for that.
If I'm reading the numbers correctly, the United States now has surpassed China as the country with the highest number of virus cases. Does this surprise you at all? Is it following a predictable trajectory?
No, I think it's a tribute to our testing. You know, number one, you don't know what the numbers are in China. China tells you numbers, and I'm speaking to President Xi tonight, I believe, and we'll have a good conversation, I'm sure. But you just don't know, you know, what are the numbers? But I think it's a tribute to the testing. We're testing tremendous numbers of people. And every day, the way the system works, and I want to thank especially Roche, has been fantastic, great company. They've done a tremendous amount. Deborah was telling me before that they've really stepped up to the plate and done great, as have other of the companies. But it seems that they're really doing it particularly well. So we'll see what happens there. But it's a tribute to the amount of testing that we're doing. We're doing tremendous testing. And I'm sure you're not able to tell what China is testing or not testing. And I think that's a little hard.
Yeah, Mr. President, on the 3.3 jobless claims, you just suggested it could 6 to 7 million. A lot of those workers...
No, I didn't say that. No, you're wrong. I didn't say that. I said some people were projecting that it would be 6 or 7, and it's, I believe, 3.3.
It came in at 3.3. Yeah. Millions of Americans out of work. Some of them will be losing their insurance. What's your plan to make sure, through no fault of your own, as you just mentioned, that they stay insured? Are you willing to plus up the subsidies for some of the exchanges under Obamacare, expand Medicaid? What's being considered?
So, well, I mean, the things I just read to you are being considered, and other things are being considered. People are going to be getting big checks, and it's not their fault. What happened to them is not their fault. So we're doing a lot of different things on health insurance. We have meetings on it today. We're taking care of our people. This is not their fault, what happened, and we're taking care. We're starting off by sending them very big checks. I think for a family of four, it's about $3,000. And we're taking care of our people. We're taking care of our workers. This was not... You know, as I say, this was not a financial crisis. This was a health crisis, a medical crisis. We're going to take care of our people. Please. Yeah.
The National Restaurant Association came out. National Restaurant Association came out with a survey this morning saying that 3% of all restaurants in this country have shuttered for good in the past 3 weeks. And the projection is that 11% more are going to close in the next 30 days. So, what do you say to a restaurant owner who is looking at his sheets and thinks he has to close within the next 30 days?
Well, I know the business very well. I understand the restaurant business. It's a very delicate business. It's a business that it's not easy. You know, I always say in a restaurant business, you can serve 30 great meals to a person or a family, and they love it. One bad meal, number 31, they never come back again. It's a very tough business, but they're great people that run restaurants. And I've heard 3% could be lost, and you could go as high as 10 or 11%. But they'll all come back in one form or another. It might be a different restaurant, but it's going to be a great business for a lot of people. And we're making it easy for people to look what we're doing, in terms of loans, what we're doing in terms of salaries. They'll all come back. It may not be the same restaurant, may not be the same ownership, but they'll all be back. Yes, sir, please.
So you mentioned the pledges from American companies to provide supplies, but as we top 81,000 cases in the U.S., does it make sense to relook at using the Defense Production Act?
Well, I talked about the Defense Production Act a lot, and I've enacted it. I have it. I can do it with a pen. And we have actually used it on two minor occasions, and then we could withdraw it. But for the most part, the companies, we don't need it. We say, we need this, and they say, don't bother, we're going to do it. I mean, we're dealing with Ford, General Motors, 3M. We're dealing with great companies. They want to do this. They want to do this. They're doing things that frankly, they don't need somebody to walk over there with a hammer and say, do it. They are getting it done. They're making tremendous amounts of equipment, tremendous amounts. And when this is over, we're going to be fully stockpiled, which they would have never been, except for a circumstance. This was something that nobody has ever thought could happen to this country. I'm not even blaming. Look, we inherited a broken situation, but I don't totally blame the people that were before me and this administration. Nobody would have ever thought a thing like this could have happened. But the Production Act, Defense Production Act, is a wonderful thing, but I just haven't had to use it. They know it's activated. They know I can use it. Maybe that frightens them a little bit. You know, it's got tremendous power, but I haven't had to. Please.
Thank you, sir. Question for me, and then another question, if you'll let me, for some of my colleagues who are social distancing.
Where are they? They're all outside trying to get in. I know.
The first question has to do with cruise liners like Carnival and Royal Caribbean. They want this relief aid, but they're worried that because they offshored to places like Panama and Liberia, they might not qualify. Senator Hawley has said that they should move back to the United States before they get a check. Do you agree? Should they pay U.S. taxes to get U.S. taxpayer relief?
So I'm a big fan of Senator Hawley, and I also like the idea. There were some senators that didn't want to do anything, like Carnival, great company. But they're based in different places. I won't tell you where. I could tell you exactly where they're based, but I won't do that. But they're based in actually more than one place. You know, ships are registered in different locations. I do like the concept of perhaps coming in and registering here, coming into the United States. It's very tough to make a loan to a company when they're based in a different country. But with that being said, they have thousands and thousands of people that work there, and maybe almost as importantly, that work on shore, filling these ships with goods and products. And the cruise line business is very important. And I know Carnival, what a great job they do, Mickey Arison. And I would think that we could stick with Senator Hawley and maybe really look at that very seriously. Look, it's a big business. It's a great business. It's a business that employs tremendous of number of people outside of the ship itself. I mean, you look at these ports. It's loaded up with shops and people that are involved with the ship. So we're going to work very hard on the cruise line business, and we're going to try and work something out. But I like the concept. Yeah, go ahead.
Second one. Thank you, sir. The Senate bill includes aid that's directly tied to the airlines. And since before the pandemic, Boeing was already suffering from, the losses of 737 MAX airplanes. Do you think it's appropriate to use this legislation to sort of provide them with $17 billion of aid on top of, $25 billion that they could qualify for as a passenger airline, and then another $4 billion that they could qualify for as a cargo airline? Is that fair?
So the airline business is a very tough business. Over many years, it's been very, very tough. It's got everything. It's got labor. It's got very strong, powerful, you look at the cost of these airliners. Everything is tough, very highly technological. You look at how complicated, how complex. It's got unions. It's got everything. The airline business, generally speaking, has unions. It's a very tough business, always been a very tough business. With that being said, we have to keep our airlines going. And we're going to be using some. Now, maybe we'll take a piece of the airlines for our country, where we loan money and we take a piece. It's all fully ready. We're ready to go. But if we didn't do that, we'd end up with no airlines, and we can't do that. The airline business is very vital to our country. It's a tough business. We have to understand that.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.